I'm Pastor Jordan LeBlanc, and it's time to find your true north. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today. I hope that you'll be inspired to find your own true north over these next few moments as God challenges us to reorient our lives around Him. Well, folks, if you're listening to this close to publication day, we've officially begun the week of love. Valentine's Day is this Thursday, and I hope that whoever has won your heart is treating you with the grace and respect that you deserve, not just this week, but every week. Plus, few holidays allow for you to overindulge in chocolate without judgment, and if that isn't a reason to celebrate Valentine's Day unashamedly, I don't know what is. A couple of summers ago, we had an issue at our house where uncared for water in the cellar had compromised the structural integrity of the I-beams that supported it. Even after installing a sump pump to address the water situation, unbeknownst to us, several of the support beams were rotting away to the point of collapse. And one Saturday night, one of them finally gave way. With a loud bang, it crumbled beneath us, causing part of the floor in our dining room to sag down by several inches. When Will, our head trustee, got there to diagnose the problem, we discovered how dangerous it really was. As we carefully replaced each I-beam and concrete block, we found at least 3 of the 8 remaining beams were critically compromised, crumbling as they were removed. It was a disaster waiting to happen. In the upper part of the house, there was no signs of trouble, no indication of what was brewing beneath the surface, but the foundation was not sound. And left unattended, the house could have collapsed in on itself. It's the nature of life. The unseen things have a tremendous impact on everything else, whether we recognize it or not. A common theme throughout Scripture is God's tendency to expose the heart of His followers, particularly those who claim to speak for Him. These were often people for whom everything seemed like it was fine in their lives, but beneath the surface, everything was crumbling. One famous example from the Hebrew Scriptures is found in the book of Isaiah, where God cuts to the heart of His people, saying, "These people say they are mine. They honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me, and their worship of me is nothing but man-made rules learned by rote." And if this was true of God through the prophets in the Old Testament, it was made even clearer through the ministry of Jesus in the New Testament. In His famous Sermon on the Mount, Jesus spends a considerable amount of time instructing His listeners that their actions come from the overflow of their heart, and that God sees that heart. So just because your hatred of somebody hasn't driven you to murder doesn't mean that your heart is clean. In fact, Jesus said that uncontrolled anger is equally as dangerous to the soul as murder. The problem that Jesus saw was that too often it was ever so easy for the people of God to divorce their inward lives from their outward appearance. In His devoutly religious culture, it was increasingly comfortable to put on the trappings of religious piety without seeing any real change in the heart of the people. A.W. Tozer calls this settling for little. Lance Witt calls it image management. When you present a portrait of yourself on the outside that doesn't match up to the reality on the inside. One group of people who appear to have been the most guilty of this were a pious group called the Pharisees. In most ways, these men were considered to be religious elites. They kept all of the laws given to them by the prophets and other leaders from years before. And they even created rules on anything and everything that the law didn't explicitly cover. They even created regulations to remove any amount of ambiguity in the law. If the law says not to work on the Sabbath, well, we will codify precisely what it means to work. These men went to extreme lengths to prove their holiness to the people around them. Jesus points out these measures in Matthew 23. On their arms, they wear extra-wide prayer boxes with scripture verses inside. They wear robes with extra-long tassels. Now, it may seem strange to us in our modern context, but it wasn't uncommon to see a Jewish man in Jesus' day with prayer boxes attached to them in some way, typically on the left arm as that was the arm closest to the heart, but often seen attached to the forehead. Neither was it odd for somebody to wear prayer robes with tassels. These were prescribed to symbolize a person's commitment to God. So if both of these were typical, what was the problem? Well, the first thing that Jesus points out is that they make a show of their devotion. Where I might use a small box to symbolize my devotion, maybe a 2-inch by 2-inch box, they would have one that was at least double that, to show off just how committed they were. Where you might have a prayer shawl with 4-inch tassels, as was common in the day, the Pharisees would double that with 8-inch tassels, anything to prove that whatever you did, they could do better. But as you read through the 23rd chapter of Matthew, you'll see a progressively harsh condemnation of this kind of thinking, until Jesus gets to what I see as the harshest condemnation yet. In Matthew 23, verse 27, Jesus says, "What sorrow awaits you, teachers of the law, and you Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, beautiful on the outside, but filled on the inside with dead people's bones and all sorts of impurity. Outwardly, you look like righteous people, but inwardly, your hearts are filled with hypocrisy and lawlessness." The problem with these men was that they had the appearance of right living, all the outward signs of being good, godly men, but it was all an act. Worse, they were corrupt and immoral, like a beautifully adorned tomb. No matter how much you dolled it up, a tomb will always be a tomb, a place of death. There are a few warnings that Jesus gives to his listeners that cut to my heart more than those levied in Matthew 23. For some, perhaps it may be encouraging to see Christ kick down people as self-righteous as the Pharisees. But when I hear these words, I shudder, because I know how easy it is to present a particular image to the people in our church, or how easy it is to project a false representation to the world while allowing my inner life to waste away. Worse than that, Lance Witt suggests that the greatest danger in our spiritual lives isn't just projecting a false image, but getting comfortable with it. The problem for the Pharisees is they got comfortable with playing the game. They were comfortable portraying a role that looked nothing like their heart. And Jesus exposes this in a major way, declaring that though they seemed alive, they were truly dead. This is the danger of a life lived disconnected from the true vine. It's why Jesus places such a premium on the heart, on tying your own heart with his. Jesus reminds us in John 15, "Yes, I am the vine, and you are the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Anyone who does not remain in me is thrown away, like a useless branch and withers. Such branches are gathered into a pile to be burned. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, you may ask for anything you want, and it will be granted. When you produce much fruit, you are my true disciples, and this brings great glory to my Father." An imploding spiritual life, one that looks shockingly like my basement did that fateful Saturday night, finds its origin in a disconnection from the true vine, and it usually finds its root in allowing a substitute to replace it. For the Pharisees of Jesus' day, their substitute was relying on their own personal goodness in place of the true vine. For others today, it's issues of comfort or power, money or prestige, sex or pleasure. You can find this root in objectively bad things such as addictions, narcissism, abuse, and neglect. But these aren't the only things that draw us away from the vine. They can be good things like hobbies, careers, friends, and even family. They can all creep in on us as our source of life and find us missing the true life that Christ has for us. The cure to an imploding spiritual life is to reorient yourself on the true vine. It is purposely re-embracing the God who is the source of life. A branch that is no longer receiving nourishment from the vine cuts off its very life source. When it does this, everything attached to it sours. Its vitality is snuffed out. Even though it may still appear to be connected, it slowly withers away, becoming brittle, and before long will separate entirely. So I challenge you, abide in the true vine that gives life. There's no substitute for the real thing. You can have all the trappings of life, but it miss it entirely. But Jesus offers us the chance to find our life in him, to find it truly and everlasting. to find in him true life that causes all substitutes to pale in comparison. So abide in the true vine today. Allow his life to transform you from the inside out, and allow his grace to redefine in you what it means to be alive. I'm believing in you and cheering you on today. Seek your true north. I love you, folks. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.